Session number 8320.
Bill Davies, Reel 4. You were telling me where you went after you'd been extending the Esky lines. Where did you go from there?
We finished that, and and then a couple of days after that, we were told we were going back to Imudras. So we didn't know where we were going after that, but we were being taken off the peninsula, and we went down to the beach one night, and finally, we found a dixie full of stew. And Lance Corporal, somebody or other, was with me, and we carried that dixie of stew with us for a couple of miles, right down to W Beach. And we didn't have a chance to have a proper meal of it, but we did lug it right down to where we were getting on the torpedo boat called the Swiftsure, and we did have a meal of it, and we left the Dixie behind then. And
that was the 2nd of August you were pulled off Cape Hatteras.
Oh, 2nd of August, yes, it would be about.
What was the condition of health of the men at this time? Had you said that
dysentery was starting? Dysentery was starting.
Had you had any trouble with that yet?
Not yet. I did the next 2 or 3 days after, and I think it was brought on by having that dixie full of food. You know, it was a good meal.
So, What happened when you landed on Mudros?
Then we were only on there about 3 days, and then we were off again to do the Anzac landing. They gave it out that we were going to go to Chanak, that was on the Asiatic side, and make an attack from there. But I think that was given to mislead the Turks and make them draw some of the troops away from Gallipoli to Chanak to prevent it. And
that was all you were told? You were never told you were actually going to Anzac?
We weren't actually told, not then, no. Not until we got on the boat. Oh, but we had to get to Mudras, though, hadn't we? Yes. We got on this boat, Swiftsure, all our battalion were on there. Now, a Swiftsure wasn't a very big ship at all. A torpedo boat destroyer, and a pretty up-to-date one. And as soon as I got on, I could smell fresh bread. I would do. And I thought a minute, and then popped down some stairs, and a fellow said, "Come on, come on, young fellow." He said, "Come down and sit and have a talk to us." I went down further still, and there, in this little galley, there were 4 or 5 naval people there, and they gave us cups of cocoa and fresh bread. I ate my bread and had a cup of cocoa, and then I ran upstairs again and took some of my fellows down as well, and we all had a very nice night. We were down there for about 4 hours, then we got back up onto the deck, and we were so congested we had to lie nearly on top of each other until we got to Mudras. And then we landed in the morning, and we were there about 3 more days, and I started with dysentery then.
What were the symptoms? Would you like to describe?
Diarrhea, pains in your tummy, but diarrhea mainly, and you'd wonder where it all came from. And very weakening, of course, that was the trouble.
Did you go sick, or did you try and stay with your unit?
Well, I was put in a, we had a one portion, fellas who were sick with dysentery, or we called it diarrhea, really, then, we were isolated, kept away from all the others. Then I got the breeze up, was I going to be left behind? Anyway, I got away, and then we made our second landing. Whitby Abbey again, and we hit a barge when we were going across to Gallipoli, and I, on the deck there, waiting for the lighters to come alongside, and somebody called from the top, said, "Will you look, see if the lighters have come alongside?" So of course, I looked, clever one, you know. I looked over the side and got hold of the rail, and the rail swung out. Somebody hadn't fastened it at the other side, and all I could see was dirty black water. I'd got all my equipment on, two rifles as well, the telescopic one and the ordinary one, and there were two REMC fellows sat on the steps running up to the next deck. My feet got caught in the gully that runs round the ship, and my hands were stretched out on that rail, and I was hanging in that for dream life. These two REMC fellows jumped up, got hold of me kit at the back and pulled me back, and the three of us we sat on the bottom of those steps and just congratulated each other that they were present when I did this, and so on. So I never answered them up the top to say whether the lighters came or not. They'd still be waiting for it, wouldn't they?
I presume you'd have been drowned if you'd fallen overboard in that case.
Yes, I'd have gone down. I had an extra 250 rounds of ammunition on top of my ordinary. Quite a lot. And all my equipment as well, you know.
Did you know anything? As you were coming into Anzac to land, did you know what the plan was for the attack?
Or no.
What had you been told?
We were to make a night landing, and we had to do it quietly, no smoking. And we did. We landed on just at dawn, and we got into a gully. I'm not sure what its name was. Agildea? No, Agildea was the second one. I don't know. Anyway, they took us into the wrong gully. We had two guides who were supposed to take us into the right gully, but they'd taken us into the wrong one, and we were stuck there. And we were stuck there until the next day. We should have been making an attack on Surrey Bear then, where the Wilts, the Royal Welsh, the Welsh Regiment, I don't know what other battalions, and the Australian, New Zealand, the Anzac people, they were on our right, and we were to have gone up Surrey Bear, and the Navy were going to give us cover fire. We'd all got a white bandage on our left shoulder to show, so the Navy could see us. They dropped shells when some of the lads had been up the top, the Wilts, and as they were coming down, they'd turned their... They'd no white on them at the front, you see, so the Navy couldn't tell whether they were Turks or British, and they dropped the shells amongst them. Killed a lot.
So you were landed on the... The 7th of August, was it?
About the 7th of August.
And you landed at night time. What was your first impression of Anzac when you landed at it? Did it...
No, it was all right. It was all right. We could see the various gullies, heaps and heaps of them all the way round. There must have been 5 or 6 gullies which ran up towards the middle of Gallipoli itself. Surrey Bear was 971. That was its height, and we called it 971. And that's where the Wilts, they were all, when we went up the next day, that was the 8th of August, I looked over with a periscope and I could see a Wilts officer laid nicely out, and he had his new map case there and his new, he'd got his best suit on. He looked a really nice young fellow, and he was killed, of course. And then all that area was covered with bodies.
This is when you'd moved up through the gullies towards 971, sorry.
Yes, we'd gone up Aguildea, the one that we should have gone up first. And then...
Were you under fire at all while you were going up Aguildea?
Oh, yes. Yes. Shells, high explosives, shrapnel.
Was it more concentrated than it had been at Hellas?
Oh, yes. Yes, with the Hadders. Absolutely. Absolutely hopeless we were. We knew it was... We felt that it was futile. We couldn't have gone in. We couldn't have gone up that hill again. We wouldn't have had enough. They got up to the top, some of the fellows... And they saw the other side of the Dardanelles, right the other side. But
was that someone in your regiment, or
none of it? Not a Bowman. No, we stayed on a ledge that ran along below, and it had been a trench before, and there were sandbags thrown in. Then. Ginger Harp was killed. That was the first bad do we had. A shell dropped right amongst them. Sergeant Dixon and him and about 8 others were all killed right at the end. They were on at the front of my company, and I was at the tail end. So my little lot were okay. Simply told them to keep close to the side and don't bother. So we carried on until we came to where that shell had gone, and what we knew later on as the secret sap. And we went down a sap, and it took us into the next gully without taking us over the top. And we went down through it, and we trod on one body as we were going through, and we think it was Freddie Sinker, a butcher from Edgeley. They were not sure, but he was never found. And we got into this, we moved into this next gully, which was quite a deep one, and we stayed on that side of the gully.
The left-hand side?
Left-hand side. Now, the Turks were on top of the hill behind us at 971, so they could have... If we were on the other side of the gully, we'd have been seen off. Then we went down there to what was known as the chessboard, where the Royal Welsh had previously, the day before, they lost 39 killed there, missing, believed killed, and they got to the chessboard itself, and they were killed by 5 from everywhere down at the bottom there. And the Turks' trench was all covered in with big logs of wood, and they could do nothing with them. So we were lined up that afternoon, and we'd been given 2 bombs each. and we were going to make the attack on it again. And our CO, Colonel Drummond Willoughby, he was a son of the Earl of Ancaster, he came galloping down over the hill, and he said, "You're not going." And we were all lined up, just ready for the off. I was on the left-hand side of the platoon. We said our goodbyes, and we were going then. We turned right round, and we walked back into the gully again. So we missed that one.
How did you feel about this 11th hour reprieve?
Well, we knew it had to be done, and there were plenty of us. There was perhaps about 800 of us, something like that, ready to go over and over again. It'd have got through probably, but we would have lost a lot of people. So he saved his battalion and saved us.
During your account of this fighting, the picture you get is of a lot of confusion and of a lot of people not knowing quite exactly what they were meant to be
That's
doing.
That's true. You didn't know what was happening. No one ever told us, not until we were ready to do this job. And it was only whispered about those trenches, and we found out it was so afterwards. I found out about those 37 ones because I became Orderly Room Sergeant of the Royal Welsh, and I always had the names of those fellows who was missing, belief, killed in the nominal role. So I knew all about them.
What was the ground like? Was it very rough ground, difficult? Did you get tired during the marching and the advance?
It, sandy soil, you slipped and slid about. Mainly sandy. Down on that bottom piece it was sandy. And behind us and on our right, the New Zealanders were. And they, water was still a problem, but they had a little well. And later on, from that gully we were in, we went down there and got water from them. And I met a fellow there, Ozzy Mayo, Stockport man, and he knew my brother in Auckland, New Zealand, and he was very friendly with him, and I knew their family. So he was looking after this little well. So I was okay. They fixed us up with rations and water as well, and some of my other lads as well.
Did you get very tired though during this advance? Physically exhausted, or did you manage to get to the top fairly fresh, you know?
We're fresh enough, yes, for then.
Had you recovered from...
Keyed up. We were keyed up. It's something that you can't describe, really, because we knew this is the job we've got to do, kind of thing.
Had you personally recovered from your dysentery fully by
no.
then?
No. That was still with me. Then...
So after these couple of nights confused fighting, what happened
then? Then we dropped back to a rather nice place. It was a ridge that ran along. We'd come up the morning before, and we found a good little camping place there, and we were all down there. And we'd had no sleep then, I think, for about 5 nights at all. Then,
during those 5 nights, had you been in action all the time with the Turks, or
not really in action, but under fire all the time? You had to keep out of the way.
You never really saw the Turks, but you were under fire from them.
No, no. We saw plenty of dead ones. And then...
So after 5 nights without sleep, what were you very tired, obviously, or...?
Absolutely. Now, this particular night, I got in trouble there. I was detailed to go down to the beach and get water from the beach and take my platoon, the whole lot of them, down there. Mind you, we were all tired. And we were to go down. So we couldn't go down until it was dark. Because if we'd gone down in the daylight, we'd have been bumped off, probably. So, because you're under fire from everywhere, all the hilltops, all the way around, you know. Then we got down for a sleep, and we were going to go off at about 4 in the morning. Well, at about 2 o'clock, somebody came to me and said, "Hey, are you going for water?" So I said, "Yes, but I'll have to get the fellows together." I couldn't find them. They were all over the place. I kept waking one fellow and then another, and not my lads. So finally I said, "Well, I couldn't take a platoon full of fellows, but I couldn't get a platoon fuller." And I said, "I'll go up at 4 o'clock in the morning when it was dawn." And that wouldn't do for them. And they came to me twice to see if I'd gathered anybody. I got about 4 or 5, that's all. Well, I couldn't have gone down there to the beach with, say, 10 cans. And they didn't get any water that morning. I went later on, at about 7 o'clock, I should think it would be, and finally got the platoon to bring the water up, and the officers there washed in that water, and we'd had all that trouble. I got a...
So, you say that the water that you'd gone to fetch wasn't doled out, it was just used for the officers to wash in?
It wasn't, it was for drinking as well. It was the only water we had. And they were in dirty wells too. We heard sometime that the Turks, before they left there, had dropped some dead bodies in there. It might have been a tale, of course, I don't know. Then... I had to go before my company officer, then my battalion officer, and got a real ticking off. I took my pay book, so they could drop me down from sergeant to private. I expected a court-martial for disobeying an order. But it was an order that had been given to me by the sergeant shoemaker, who held no rank at all. So it wasn't valid. He couldn't give me an order. So I got away with it. And there was no water fatigue after that. And there was no washing of officers' nice, quite clean bodies. It was only used for drinking. Then,
did you ever have trouble with men falling asleep on duty during these five days without sleep?
About that time, we had a trench running up to towards 971 from there, which had been dug by some of our fellows, I think. And there was one there with a hand sticking out. And we decided that we would dig him out and put him in properly afterwards, but I don't know whether we ever did. Anyway, I went round with the orderly officer one night there and took him into this trench that I was looking after. And we found one of the sentries asleep, and he said, "Go on, you go on, wake him up, I'll go back." And we wakened him up. And then when we made the second attempt, he said, "All well."
So the officer had done this deliberately to avoid having to court-martial.
Mm. He'd have been in trouble, you know.
Was this fairly typical of the officer's attitude to that sort of offence? Were they understanding about
it? I think we were lucky with having that officer that particular night. The lad appreciated it, of course, but he was really like the rest of us. We'd had no sleep at all. And I was the same too, because, see, I was up all night, seeing that lads were doing as they should. Then,
did you ever sometimes feel that being a sergeant wasn't quite worthwhile, in view of the fact that you get into
that's
trouble
why
for...
I took my pay book. I wasn't bothered. Wouldn't have worried me in the least, because I'd lost responsibility. And I should have had an officer, and I hadn't got one. I'd not had one all the way along from leaving England.
A platoon officer?
Not since that Lieutenant Kelly went to become a doctor. Never had an officer. That's what kept me on my toes, I think.
What happened next then, after this period below Sarry Bear and Hill 971?
Oh, went down to the beach.
Which beach was that?
Oh, we went to the big gully. A big gully. Shell gully. Had one fellow killed. Oh, that shoemaker fellow, he got a bullet through his leg, and I sent him to the hospital and he had gangrene and died, we found afterwards. Then we were on a flattish portion. We could see the beach then, and we were fairly safe in that gully. Not too good. They could get over on one side, and the shells used to burst on that side, shrapnel. And during the night, their bullets that they shot up in the air, they would come and hit some other fellows.
Had you joined up with the Suvla Bay landing yet at this time?
Not quite, no. Oh, I was taken off with four men, and we went into the end of the whole of the Anzac lining, Anzac force trench, and we were about 10 yards from the sea, and we were right at the end. Quinn's and Courtney's post were there first, and we had to go up a step ladder from this part where we'd got up so far, and we went up this step ladder and then dropped into this Quinn's post.
So you actually visited Quinn's post?
Yes, sir. We were in there. I was liaison